to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. So glad you're with us wherever you're joining us. If you're joining us here on television in the Santa Barbara County area, we welcome you at TVSB. And so many of you are joining us all around the world on all these different platforms, including the YouTube channel, which is up and running. And you can subscribe, and a lot of you have. You can also podcast. If you're a podcast person, you can search under Good Life Conversations. And you can listen there, and we've seen that continue to grow. So if you're a podcast person, that's there. As always, you can go to goodlifetelevision.org. That also has all the long-form interviews. And then we break up those interviews into what we call power clips. So those are shorter, and we'd love to have you check it out. You can also obviously follow us on all the social media platforms, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and so forth. So we're honored to have you joining us. It's been so neat to hear from so many of you. We hope to continue to hear from you as you watch and kind of digest what the wonderful people and the wonderful content that is coming forth from some amazing people. So we're grateful. As always, we're brought to you by Bunnin Chevrolet. We're so grateful for Leo Bunnin and the whole team down there. So thank you. And I'm so excited about my guest today. Amazing person, amazing story, Luisa Jovanovic. Did I get it right?
Yes, Dean.
Got the last name right. I was researching or rehearsing it in my head. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Dean.
Yeah. So, and we'll get into kind of what Luisa is doing, which I think is amazing work, working with leaders, working with entrepreneurs. It's really a powerful thing that she's doing now, but let's start with kind of where you grew up and a little bit about your life.
I would love to share. I'm actually a foreigner. I moved here from Armenia when I was 5.
Okay.
And I remember my first memory is going to school in first grade, and they put me in, and then all of a sudden they came back and took me back and put me in kindergarten. And it was because I didn't know this at the time, because I didn't speak English, and they didn't feel I was ready for kindergarten, I mean for first grade, so I went back to kindergarten. And I remember making up that I must have not been smart enough. And I remember thinking, wow, I'm different. And you know, being a foreigner, you're watching your parents, and I know now, doing all of the work that I'm doing, what gets programmed in us at a young age till the age of 8, well, I was a child who was looking for security and safety, and you know, coming to America with parents who have no money and who don't speak English, well, life isn't super safe.
Yeah.
And I remember being a child scanning the room, scanning as spaces, being like, what's happening here? What's happening there? And I'm curious, and I was curious, is that what other people are doing? Are they like scanning their environment, being like, is this safe? Is this not safe?
Wow.
It's just part of how I grew up.
What did your parents do?
So my mom was a pharmacist in Armenia, and my dad was an engineer. And they came here, and that is not what they were able to do. So they had minimum wage jobs, and they just barely were all about working as hard as you can to provide for the family. So we lived in a tiny little place in not a great area, but they did make sure we went to private school. So I remember realizing that whatever your intention is, you can actually have happen. So even though they had no money, we still went to private school because their intention was to keep us safe.
Wow. What part, where were you? LA?
LA, in Hollywood.
Oh, you were?
I was.
So you're in a tiny place in Hollywood.
Tiny place.
Your parents are working minimum wage jobs, and you end up at a private school.
Mm-hmm. Both my sister and I.
Wow. What a gift that is. Right. And then what?
And then our house got robbed, and I think they were very committed to moving, because their intention was, we're moving to America to build a life and to create a life for these children. So in a very short time, within a short amount of years, they bought a house. And we moved to North Hollywood, and we went to private school still. And I'm still watching my parents and experiencing life. But one of the things for me is we were different. You know, my parents made different food compared to my American friends. We didn't get peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for school. We got things that didn't smell so good. Or I mean, at the time, I didn't feel they smelled
so good.
They were just different. And so I would throw away my lunch because I didn't want to be different. And I just really was so embarrassed being different.
Wow.
And I think that played a huge role in not feeling that confident. I really was afraid to participate because I was not confident through being different. But I really would watch other people who were confident, and I was like, God, it would be so great if I can experience life that way. I would watch Oprah, and I would really listen to her stories, and I would watch Kelly Ripa, and I'd listen to watch how self-expressed she was. I was like, God, wouldn't it be great if I could be that way? But I wasn't, because I was so embarrassed.
Wow, so that had a big impact. I want to get back to that. So you end up going into a career in salons, and you're doing all that. Mm-hmm. For how long?
25 years.
25 years.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and we'll talk about that.
Well, I love the Barbie movie, because I had Barbies, and what I loved about my Barbies is I gave them haircuts. And I loved my Barbie because I gave them an awesome haircut, and I kept them because I loved the haircut I gave them.
It's a finite number of haircuts you can give a Barbie, but...
Oh, no, I remember a specific one. It was a bob, and I remember that specific haircut being like, wow, I love this Barbie because I gave her a really killer haircut.
So you were cutting hair early.
Yeah, actually, my parents had no money, so my mom would ask me to color her hair. And I would do it, and I thought it was because I was great at it, but she just couldn't afford getting it done. So I grew up thinking I loved doing hair, because I really just got great at doing something that was a necessity. And then I have the story, when I was in sixth grade, I was walking through a mall, and at the time, we didn't have social media, so people would come up to you and say, can I offer you to be a model for a class? And then they would give you, you know, practice haircutting on you, and then you would get it done. So I heard model. I didn't hear guinea pig. So I'm like, Dad, you've got to take the day off of work. I'm going to go be a model for this class. So I went to the salon. This beautiful woman walks out with long legs, high heels, amazing. And she gives me this haircut. And I remember thinking, when I grow up, I want to be a hairdresser because I love this feeling. So fast forward, this is sixth grade. Fast forward, I'm 47 years old now. And I'm at the salon. I'm telling the owner this story because I moved back from Florida back to LA. That's the whole story. And I'm at a new salon, and I'm telling the owner this story. He said, what salon was that? I said, Cassandra 2000. He said, I used to own that salon.
No way.
So this many years later, I end up in the salon that owner used to be.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think anything intentional, it really still manifests. And I have to be very careful what I say, because I will get it.
Yeah. So ladies, when they're getting their haircut, talk.
Yes. They do.
See, I don't talk. I don't like to talk.
Oh.
If I'm getting my hair cut.
Interesting.
I'm annoyed by it. If somebody's questions, like, I just want a haircut. I'm reading the sports page. I just want to get a haircut. But ladies talk,
a lot.
Turns out.
Oh, absolutely.
I've heard about this.
Right. A lot.
So you must know, like, a lot of
absolutely.
Stuff about a lot of people.
Absolutely. And I honestly felt like coaching was natural because that's all I was doing. And people would say, you're my guru. And I'd say, I don't know. I mean, isn't that life? Isn't this how life goes? And everyone who left my chair would say, I always leave with a nugget. I get to take action in an area that you opened up in our conversation. So I assumed every hairdresser was like that. And every time someone left my chair, they would love their hair, but they would always thank me for like allowing them the space to shine and seeing things in them that they hadn't even noticed before. And
isn't that amazing?
Even in, I've also heard, well, I've always been like this and it's great that you could do it, but I don't see that how I can. And I'm like, I promise you, just take a little tiny, tiny moment of believing it's possible. You can make it possible. And they would resist me. And then the next day they'd call and say, I did it.
Yeah.
And it would bring me so much joy.
I think that's so great. And, you know, probably a lot of those people, maybe they didn't have anybody else to talk to. I think sometimes we overestimate, like, everybody has a bunch of friends and community that's there. But, it's interesting to me.
Yeah.
You know, they probably were like, this is a gift. Like, you know.
Absolutely. There's safety, you know.
Yeah.
There's comfort, there's safety and vulnerability. You know, you're being touched by someone, so you can't help but be vulnerable.
Right. That's true. I hadn't thought of that. So, okay, so let's go back to, so early in your life as an immigrant as somebody who didn't speak English and is thrust into this country, you talk about the safety, feeling unsafe, mm-hmm. and confidence, feeling less than,
right,
or in some way.
Mm-hmm.
How have you addressed those, or how have those changed, those really formative, right, things in a young kid's life?
Right.
How has it impacted you? How have you grown? And what, and how are you now using what's happened with other people?
I love that question. So I had this story, and I got so good at telling this story that when I was pregnant with my son, they told me my blood type is an A positive. I was like, wow, that's the first A plus of my life. Because I really had this story that I wasn't smart enough. But I think our gifts are hidden from ourselves. So I looked around one day and realized I'm really surrounded by spectacular people who really love being in relationship with me. I am consistently around extraordinary. And being a hairdresser, not only does everyone tell me their stories, I tell them the same story, chair after chair after chair. So I knew as I would tell my story, when they would get to this like poor me part where they would go, oh, I'm so sorry. I was so used to telling my story in such a way that it was kind of a victim story. Mm-hmm. Until one day someone said to me, I don't see you that way. I don't really see you as a victim, and being enrolled in your story is not serving you. And I thought, how interesting. And I thought, I keep telling the same story, yeah, and enrolling people into poor me. And I thought that was vulnerability. I really believed I was being vulnerable. And then I realized, what if I were to shift my story a little bit? Just like gratitude, right? We're grateful and then, right, we get more things to be grateful for.
Right.
What if I shift my story a little bit? And all of a sudden, I started to get even more extraordinary people in my life. People were a lot more attracted to my energy. And I started shifting to how I woke up with my own essence that excited me. So I was like, I'm not a victim. I'm actually a warrior. And I started waking up differently. I started sharing differently. New energy started being attracted to me. And I realized, so it takes one person to not be enrolled in someone's story. So when people sit in my chair and tell me their story, I listen for what's beautiful. I listen for what's possible. I look for what's extraordinary about who they are, and I don't buy their victim story.
That is powerful.
And they, in that one moment, even though they've been telling the same story, they see possibility. Just like I did.
That is such a powerful thing. Because we're telling ourselves a story.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard it said like that, like you said it. But there's a narrative.
Absolutely.
Going on. And I've heard this. I don't know anything about psychology, but I've heard this, that actually there can be like well-worn paths because of the story we keep repeating. Things that actually may not be true, but we can talk ourselves into thinking that they're actually true.
100%.
If we say it enough.
100%.
Isn't that right?
So I have a story about that. I told my son, let's draw a picture about a memory you have that brings you joy. He said, I actually have a memory that doesn't bring me joy. And he's 17 now, so he was 16 when we had this conversation. He said, I remember being young and having chickenpox, and you gave me penicillin, and I'm allergic to penicillin. I said, well, child, I love you, but you've never had chickenpox. And the only way you... And the only way you know you're allergic to penicillin is having it once, having a reaction, and then...
You know.
So he, right, has been carrying this story of him having... He goes, well, what were those red bumps? I said, you had a fever and it broke into a rash. And that's what you had. And so he's so clear that he was actually upset that I was changing his story, because,
right,
it was his narrative he had been attached to.
Right.
And it took a few days for him to unravel that, being okay that he remembered it differently.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Uh-huh.
That, like, What a wonderful, compelling story that is. The only detail is it never happened.
Exactly.
And the other thing is, if we replay even stuff that's bad, I've heard this, that when we replay it, we're experiencing it again.
Absolutely.
In our system.
Absolutely.
It's like living it all over again.
And
trauma.
Imagine I'm doing hair and sharing the same story over and over again, and I'm thinking I'm being relatable. I'm thinking it's okay because it's my story, but I'm reinforcing it over and over again. I didn't realize
what
I was doing.
So you were doing it like 10 times a day.
At least.
Wow.
Right. And now people leave my chair so excited, and I love when they tell me, God, I'm just so lit up about what you created as possible because I'm watching you live in a completely different life.
Wow. So let me think about which direction to go here. So you're coaching now.
Yes.
So let's get to that and we can go back. So now you're working with people. Mm-hmm. This is something that's happened to you. You've come to a place where you can see something different.
Yes.
And now you want other people to experience the same thing.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
So tell me how you do it. What happens?
Well, I initially needed my own support because I was going through a divorce and I really didn't know how to pick myself up from who I had created myself to be. I had created a wife and a mother and poor me and what a rough life I have. And I lived in a beautiful home, drove a beautiful car, and had an extraordinary life. Just was missing it. I somehow...
You just weren't there.
Wasn't there. And I really had this like, wow, it's so great on the outside, but something's missing. And it was me. I kept thinking when my husband said, let's go to have yogurt, I made up that he only wanted me there to watch the children. I literally was living a completely different life. And I didn't know I was. I was constantly sad. I was constantly feeling bad for myself. And I felt justified because I was looking for things to justify my sadness. So I'm getting divorced now because what else would happen in that scenario, right? And I realized in that space how my stories were really ruining my life. But when I was growing up, I've always been drawn to supporting people, to helping people, to being a coach. Like, I naturally am a coach. And I remember being in Florida, riding my bike, and I was listening to Oprah and Eckhart Tolle. And he said to her, what do you like to do? She said, I like to learn and I like to teach. My brain said, me too. And then it said, who do you think you are? I was like, huh, well, that's sad. And then I thought, COVID's happening. Everybody's going through watching Netflix, sharing what shows they're watching, and I'm getting certified to be a coach. I'm all in the coaching world. I'm so loving life. A year later, I'm doing a meditation in a class, and it's going through a journey of finding your purpose. And it says, what's your purpose? This time my brain says, world leader. And I was like, well, yeah, as opposed to who do you think you are? And then I realized, the who do you think you are has me not showing up in life, me telling sad stories, has me believing my sad stories, telling everybody that like, oh, what a rough life to live in this beautiful home and I'm just so sad. And now world leader pops up. And it doesn't mean that anything other than I get to participate. I get to like live, I get to be here. I get to have a voice, I get to matter. And so if I get to do that, how awesome that I get to inspire others who didn't think they mattered to do that.
Wow. So you'll sit down with somebody. How does it start? Do they share their story
with you? It happens so naturally. I'm constantly listening, and it's just how I...
And you're picking up stuff.
Absolutely. So in every conversation, we share what our beliefs are. We don't realize they're coming out of our mouth, but they are. And everyone's hearing how we tell our story. And I repeat back to them what I heard. Like, you want a relationship, but you don't believe in love. You want to be really rich and very successful, but you think you're going to get stolen from. You don't believe that you're capable. You don't think it's possible for you. You don't think you're smart enough. And so all of those things like come out of our mouth. And we say them even though we say what we want, and then we also say why it's not going to happen. So I listen.
Do they call that self-sabotage?
Absolutely.
And that's like something, what is that? What is self-sabotage?
I don't think it's intentional. I think it's our beliefs. Our beliefs are saying.
Our beliefs just happen to come out of our mouth.
Absolutely.
I actually don't think this is, I'm good enough for this.
Exactly.
Stuff like that.
Like I would tell the story, my only A+ was my blood type. And I really was like, I'm just not smart enough. But then I looked around and I'm like, everyone around me is pretty remarkable and they're extraordinary. So if I wasn't smart enough, I sure have surrounded myself with pretty smart people.
I sure have faked them out. Yeah. So that's an interesting thing. So it's coming from that demotion to kindergarten, that came with you all the way up.
It sure did.
I'm not smart enough. I don't belong in this room.
Right.
That's something that's very insightful that you figured that out, that you got to the root.
Absolutely.
And then have you overcome that? I mean, is that?
It still plays a role in my life, but I get over it faster.
You know when it's happening.
Right. For example, being able to be here with someone who doesn't think they're smart enough or capable of, worthy enough, be here. No.
Yeah.
And so I get to really be extraordinary enough to say yes to things that scare me. You know, you guys were talking about failure earlier. I was terrified of failure. I only wanted to do things that I felt safe doing.
Yeah.
And failure was not on my list of choices. I didn't want to look bad. I didn't want to do it wrong. I didn't want to fail. But I'm around so many successful people, and watching them embrace failure had me actually get that people look at you and say, wow, you're willing to play so large that you can actually fail that big too. And
yeah.
And it's okay.
I've failed huge. Yeah. It's a humbling, obviously, thing, but it's something I've just realized. All the great ones, all the people that we failed. Like, we don't see that side of it.
Right.
And that's what I think when we were talking about earlier. I mean, I think, you know, learning how to fail is almost something.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think it's such a gift to do it beautifully and not make it, there's something wrong with me,
right.
I'm not enough, I won't try this again. It's like feedback. It's neutral and it's feedback to what gets to actually shift. It's an opportunity.
That's so good. So you're working with business people, you're working with entrepreneurs, leaders,
yes.
People of all kinds. They can find you. It's Connect the Source.
ConnectWithSource.com.
ConnectWithSource. ConnectWithSource.com.
.com.
ConnectWithSource.com is the website. There's also a LinkedIn page, Luisa Jovanovic, but the first letter is J, but I'm saying it properly, Jovanovic.
Exactly.
So what is your vision as you look out for the next chapter of your life? What's your sweet spot in terms of, you could write the story for the next 10 years on how you're going to spend it, how you're going to impact, what would it look like?
I would be speaking on stages,
inspiring,
really? Creating, and during this time, I got certified to teach a course. It's called Clarity Catalyst, and it started 40 years ago in Stanford University, where people were graduating and coming back saying, I did everything I was supposed to do, and I'm not happy. So Dr. Michael Ray created this course on mindfulness and emotional intelligence, and they studied children. And the course is on creativity. You access your creativity to find what you would like to do. And that's how I found coaching, because I was a hairdresser. I'm like, I love doing hair, and I only do things I love doing. Like, I'm a complete stand for loving what I do. So I chose coaching through the course, and now I get to teach the course. And it's for anyone who's stuck in their life going, I am not sure where my next steps are. So I would love to continue teaching the course and just really traveling the world, speaking on stages and impacting. And whether it's standing behind the chair doing it one person at a time or thousands of people. It really is just to share that self-expression, love, passion is not something you do, it's something you get to be. And you get to experience it physically and live a super fulfilling life.
So good. So what would if you had one keynote speech to give, what would the title of the speech be?
Your inner God and goddess gets to live this life. You get to live full out. Like it's passionate.
And what would you tell me what you'd say? Tell me what what if you're on stage and you got 1,000 people in front of you, what do you want to give them?
The opportunity that anything you have physically experienced in your soul to live it out, because we feel everything we want to do, to know it's possible to externally live it. It's not just something that you hope you can have. You can actually get there.
You can actually live this life.
Yes.
And so part of that obviously is the victim narrative.
You get to let go of that story.
You get to let go of that story. That's a powerful thing. You get to let go of the sad victim story.
Absolutely.
And do something different.
Right. That this is who I've always been doesn't have to be that this is who I will be.
And there's kind of like a discipline involved in this, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, I work out every day. I journal every day. I meditate every day. And I love it. You know, people, it's something you get to love.
Yeah.
It's not I have to do this. I actually wake up excited to.
Yeah. What role does community, friendship have in this thought process?
It's really a huge component. I call it our tribe.
Yeah.
You know, you want to have people in your circle on the same path as you. And so everyone is supporting each other, inspiring each other. So there's going to be days where I'm down. But having my tribe, having my community, having people who are on that path with me, who would never stand for my poor me story.
Yes.
I don't have any more people who listen and would not say, I don't really have those people anymore in my life. So I get to be a stand for my community and they're a stand for me. Nobody would buy that story with me anymore.
Interesting. Because like the inner circle, my wife and I always talk about it in terms of circles. Like there's kind of this, and then there's this, and then, you know, and you know, 20 years ago, we kind of let anybody in.
Right.
You know, because, the more the merrier. And then we kind of learned over time after getting, you know, obviously, you know, betrayed and backstabbed and, you know, what we all go through, like, okay, I think we need to tighten this up a little bit and be real careful about who's in here because we don't want to do this anymore. And the same thing, like, what are they saying? You know, are they telling me who I actually am?
Right.
Or are they participating in this sob story that is just, right?
Absolutely.
So we have to actually pick our friends well.
Yes. And now I look around and my friends are amazing. And that's part of the course too. It's like you build a community within the course because it's all like-minded people. You know, all of a sudden you're doing work with people who are here because they want to grow. You're now having opportunities to meet people who are on the path with you. And it's something that goes through your entire life at this point. All the people that I've met along the way, and they say transformation is not for people who need it, it's for people who want it. How much of my life I spent trying to save people who had no interest in being saved.
Right.
They were like, Luisa, leave me alone.
Right. That's a good point.
And so there's people who actually want it. So why was I, you know, spending time with someone who's not interested?
That's a great point. Time is valuable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We have to be really careful about our time too.
Absolutely.
I mean, because that's a great point. Because people who are not wanting it, like you say, I mean, you know, in the recovery community, they talk about, you know, the gift of desperation. Like, if somebody's not there, forget about it.
You know,
like, there's nothing to do.
Right. Yeah. And it's also when you take the lid off the pot and you're hours on end listening to somebody and they're not willing to change.
Right.
You're not supporting them.
No.
So I would be the, like, I'll sit here and listen to you and I'm just so loving and compassionate. But really, I was not serving that person at all. Nor was anyone who was listening to my sob story. No one was serving me during that time.
Isn't that interesting? And they probably think, man, I'm such a great listener. I'm such a great loving person. But the reality is, it just prolonged the misery.
Absolutely.
So sometimes you need that person to step up and say, you know what? This is BS.
Yes.
I'm sorry to say it. Like, I mean, isn't that right?
Absolutely.
Like, we need those people.
Thank God for that person who did it with me, because we're always enrolling everybody into our story. And I was a master enroller.
Welcome
at
to the club.
For me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And thank God.
You know, there's a scripture about that. It talks about the wounds of a friend are better than, you know, the kisses of an enemy. And we don't, none of us want, you know, take a gut punch on something, but that's actually sometimes the most loving thing that can possibly happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're not going to like what I'm about to say, but I love you. And here's, I mean, isn't that
parenting? I mean,
oh yeah,
I do that with my children all the time. I love you so much. And my daughter has said to me, I don't think that person's mom loves them that much because she's never participating in anything she's doing. She just has a lot of freedom. And our children tell us what they're looking for.
Isn't,
you know, even
nice?
Though she'll say, leave me alone. I don't want to come home right now. Well, guess what? I heard you also say that person's mom doesn't love them enough because they don't really care where they are. Because I care where you are.
Right. Sometimes I think we want to be liked so much. Sometimes I see parents do this even with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like saying, you know, the end of the day here, it's not important that your kids, that you win the popularity contest.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, what's important is that you're parenting them.
Absolutely.
And love, discipline is part of it.
Right. It creates the security and the safety I was
right.
looking
Here's
for
the
as a
lines.
Child.
Here's the lines. These are the ones you don't cross. You know, if they don't have that, then it's ironically that they end up not feeling loved.
Right. Or safe.
Or safe.
I didn't feel loved. I felt loved. I didn't feel safe because my parents were so busy surviving that I missed what safety looked like from them.
Wow. You've really learned a lot.
And I'm so grateful for it now.
Oh, I'm so grateful for you.
Thank you.
And you're going to have a great impact on a lot of people.
So
connect with Source.
Yes.
Connectwithsource.com. Check it out. Louisa is doing coaching. She does have that course she talked about. She's certified in Stanford University originated, and it's I've heard good things about it. You can connect with her on LinkedIn. Louisa Jovanovic with a J, and connectwithsource.com. And again, if you're stuck, which we can all be stuck. I've been stuck. Everybody can be stuck at some point. Or if you're wandering around, you don't know what your purpose is or what you should do next, I'd encourage you to connect with Louisa. She's got a lot to offer, obviously. So thank you.
Thank you, Dean. This was fabulous.
Great to meet you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.